He coughed quietly before replying. Did he ever respond to any of Lord Penrod's messages?
No, Club said. But he did execute the last messenger.
Well, that isn't a very good sign, Sazed thought slowly. Of course, there hadn't been very many good signs over the last few days. The city was on the edge of starvation, and their brief respite of warmth was over. It would snow this evening, if Sazed guessed right. That made him feel even more guilty to be sitting in the kitchen nook, beside a warm hearth, sipping broth as his metal mines sapped his strength, health, senses, and power of thought. He had rarely tried to fill so many at once.
"You don't look so good," Clubs noted, sitting.
Sazed blinked, thinking through the comment.
"My gold mind," he said slowly. "It draws my health, storing it up."
He glanced at his bowl of broth.
"I must eat to maintain my strength," he said, mentally preparing himself to take a sip.
It was an odd process. His thoughts moved so slowly that it took him a moment to decide to eat. Then his body reacted slowly, the arm taking a few seconds to move. Even then the muscles quivered, their strength sapped away and stored in his pewter mind. Finally, he was able to get a spoonful to his lips and take a quiet sip. It tasted bland. He was feeling scent as well, and without it his sense of taste was severely hampered. He should probably be lying down, but if he did that, he was liable to sleep. And while sleeping, he couldn't fill metal mines, or at least he could fill only one. A bronze mind, the metal that stored wakefulness, would force him to sleep longer in exchange for letting him go longer without sleep on another occasion. Sazed sighed, carefully setting down his spoon, then coughing. He'd done his best to help avert the conflict. His best plan had been to send a letter to Lord Penrod, urging him to inform Straff Venture that Vin was gone from the city. He had hoped that Straff would then be willing to make a deal. Apparently that tactic had been unsuccessful. Nobody had heard from Straff in days. Their doom approached like the inevitable sunrise. Penrod had allowed three separate groups of townspeople, one of them composed of nobility, to try to flee Luthadel. Straff's soldiers, more wary after Ellen's escape, had caught and slaughtered each group. Penrod had even sent a messenger to Lord Jastie's locale, hoping to strike some deal with the southern leader, but the messenger had not returned from the Kolos camp.
"Well," Clubs said, "at least we kept them off for a few days."
Sazed thought for a moment.
"It was simply a delay of the inevitable, I fear."
"Of course it was," Club said. "But it was an important delay. Elland and Vin will be almost 4 days away by now. If the fighting had started too soon, you can bet that little Miss Mistborn would have come back and gotten herself killed trying to save us."
"Ah," Sazed said slowly, forcing himself to reach for another spoonful of broth. The spoon was a dull weight in his numb fingers. His sense of touch, of course, was being siphoned into a tin mind.
"How are the city defenses coming?" he asked as he struggled with the spoon.
"Terribly," Club said. 20,000 troops may sound like a lot, but try stringing them out through a city this big.
"But the Kolos won't have any siege equipment," Sazed said, focused on his spoon. "Or archers."
"Yes," Club said, "but we have 8 city gates to protect, and any 5 are within quick reach of the Kolos. None of those gates was built to withstand an attack, and as it stands I can barely post a couple thousand guards at each gate, since I really don't know which way the Kolos will come first."
"Oh," Sazed said quietly.
"What did you expect, Terraceman?" Clubs asked. "Good news? The Kolos are bigger, stronger, and far crazier than we are. And they have an advantage in numbers."
Sazed closed his eyes, quivering spoon held halfway to his lips.
he suddenly felt a weakness unrelated to his metal mines.
Why didn't she go with them? Why didn't she escape?
As Sazed opened his eyes, he saw Clubs waving for a servant to bring him something to eat. The young girl returned with a bowl of soup. Clubs eyed it with dissatisfaction for a moment, but then lifted a knotted hand and began to slurp. He shot a glance at Sazed.
"You expecting an apology out of me, Terraceman?" he asked between spoonfuls.
Sazed sat shocked for a moment.
"Not at all, Lord Cladent," he finally said.
"Good," Club said. "You're a decent enough person. You're just confused."
Sazed sipped his soup, smiling.
"That is comforting to hear, I think."
He thought for a moment.
"Lord Cladent, I have a religion for you."
Clubs frowned.
"You don't give up, do you?"
Sazed looked down. It took him a moment to gather together what he'd been thinking about before.
"What you said earlier, Lord Cladent, about situational morality, it made me think of a faith known as Dadrida. Its practitioners spanned many countries and peoples. They believed that there was only one God, and that there was only one right way to worship."
Clubs snorted.
"I'm really not interested in one of your dead religions, Terraceman. I think that..."
"They were artists," Sazed said quietly.
Clubs hesitated.
"They thought art drew one closer to God," Sazed said. "They were most interested in color and hue, and they were fond of writing poetry, describing the colors they saw in the world around them."
Clubs was silent.
"Why preach this religion to me?" he demanded. "Why not pick one that is blunt like I am? Or one that worshipped warfare and soldiers?"
"Because, Lord Cladent," Sazed said.
He blinked, recalling memories with effort through his muddled mind.
"That is not you. It is what you must do, but it is not you. The others forget, I think, that you were a woodworker, an artist. When we lived in your shop, I often saw you putting the finishing touches on pieces your apprentices had carved. I know the care you used. That shop was no simple front for you. You miss it, I know."
Clubs didn't respond.
"You must live as a soldier," Sazed said, pulling something from his sash with a weak hand. "But you can still dream like an artist. Here. I had this made for you. It is a symbol of the Dadrada faith. To its people, being an artist was a higher calling even than being a priest."
He set the wooden disc on the table. Then, with effort, he smiled at Clubs. It had been a long time since he had preached a religion, and he wasn't certain what had made him decide to offer this one to Clubs. Perhaps it was to prove to himself that there was value in them. Perhaps it was stubbornness, reacting against the things Clubs had said earlier. Either way, he found satisfaction in the way that Clubs stared at the simple wooden disc with the carved picture of a brush on it.
"The last time I preached a religion," he thought, "I was in that village to the south, the one where Marsh found me." Whatever happened to him, anyway? Why didn't he return to the city?
"Your woman has been looking for you," Clubs finally said, looking up, leaving the disc on the table.
"My woman?" Sazed said. "Why, we are not..."
He trailed off as Clubs eyed him. The surly general was quite proficient at meaningful looks.
"Very well," Sazed said, sighing.
He glanced down at his fingers and the 10 glittering rings they bore. 4 were tin, sight, hearing, scent, and touch. He continued to fill these. They wouldn't handicap him much. He released his pewter mind, however, as well as his steel mind and his zinc mind. Immediately, strength refilled his body.
His muscles stopped sagging, reverting from emaciated to healthy. The fuzz lifted from his mind, allowing him to think clearly, and the thick, swollen slowness evaporated. He stood, invigorated.
"That's fascinating," Clubs mumbled.
Sazed looked down.
"I could see the change," Clubs said. "Your body grew stronger and your eyes focused. Your arms stopped shaking. I guess you don't want to face that woman without all of your faculties, eh? I don't blame you."
Clubs grunted to himself, then continued to eat. Sazed bid farewell to the man, then strode out of the kitchen. His feet and hands still seemed like nearly unfeeling lumps. Yet he felt an energy. There was nothing like simple contrast to awaken a man's sense of indomitability. And there was nothing that could sap that sensation more quickly than the prospect of meeting with the woman he loved. Why had Tyndall stayed? And, if she was determined not to go back to Terrace, why had she avoided him these last few days? Was she mad that he had sent Ellen away? Was she disappointed that he insisted on staying to help? He found her inside Keep Venture's grand ballroom. He paused for a moment, impressed, as always, by the room's unquestionable majesty. He released his sight in mind for just a moment, removing his spectacles as he looked around the awesome space. Enormous, rectangular stained-glass windows reached to the ceiling along both walls of the huge room. Standing at the side, Sazed was dwarfed by massive pillars that supported a small gallery that ran beneath the windows on either side of the chamber. Every bit of stone in the room seemed carved, every tile a part of one mosaic or another, every bit of glass colored to sparkle in the early evening sunlight. "It's been so long," he thought. The first time he'd seen this chamber, he had been escorting Vin to her first ball. It was then, while playing the part of Alette Renou, she had met Elland. Sazed had chastised her for carelessly attracting the attention of so powerful a man. And now he himself had performed their marriage. He smiled, replacing his spectacles, and filling his eyesight tin mind again. "May the forgotten gods watch over you, children. Make something of our sacrifice, if you can." Tyndall stood speaking with Doxon and a small group of functionaries at the center of the room. They were crowded around a large table, and as Sazed approached, he could see what was spread atop it. "Marsha's map," he thought. It was an extensive and detailed representation of Luthadel, complete with notations about ministry activity. Sazed had a visual image of the map, as well as a detailed description of it in one of his copper mines, and he had sent a physical copy to the Synod. Tyndall and the others had covered the large map with their own notations. Sazed approached slowly, and as soon as Tyndall saw him, she waved for him to approach.
"Ah, Sazed,"
Doxon said in a businesslike tone, voice muddled to Sazed's weak ears.
"Good. Please, come here."
Sazed stepped up onto the low dance floor, joining them at the table.
"Troop placements?" he asked. "Penrod has taken command of our armies," Doxon said, "and he's put noblemen in charge of all 20 battalions. We're not certain we like that situation."
Sazed looked over the men at the table. They were a group of scribes that Doxon himself had trained, all Ska.
"Gods," Sazed thought. "He can't be planning a rebellion now, of all times, can he?"
"Don't look so frightened, Sazed," Doxon said. "We're not going to do anything too drastic. Penrod is still letting Clubs organize the city defenses, and he seems to be taking advice from his military commanders. Besides, it's far too late to try something too ambitious."
Doxon almost seemed disappointed.
"However," Doxon said, pointing at the map, "I don't trust these commanders he's put in charge. They don't know anything about warfare, or even about survival. They've spent their lives ordering drinks and throwing parties."
"Why do you hate them so?" Sazed thought.
Ironically, Doxon was the one in the crew who looked most like a nobleman. He was more natural in a suit than Breeze, more articulate than Clubs or Spook.
Only his insistence on wearing a very unaristocratic half-beard made him stand out.
"The nobility may not know warfare," Sazed said, "but they are experienced with command, I think."
"True," Doxson said, "but so are we. That's why I want one of our people near each gate, just in case things go poorly, and someone really competent needs to take command."
Doxson pointed at the table, toward one of the gates, Steel Gate. It bore a notation of 1,000 men in a defensive formation.
"This is your battalion, Sazed. Steel Gate is the farthest the Kolos are likely to reach, and so you might not even see any fighting. However, when the battle begins, I want you there with a group of messengers to bring word back to Keep Venture in case your gate gets attacked. We'll set up a command post here in the main ballroom. It's easily accessible with those broad doors, and can accommodate a lot of motion."
And it was a not-so-subtle smack in the face of Elend Venture, and nobility in general, to use such a beautiful chamber as a setting from which to run a war. No wonder he supported me in sending Elend and Vin away. With them gone, he's gained undisputed control of Kelsier's crew.
It wasn't a bad thing. Doxson was an organizational genius and a master of quick planning. He did have certain prejudices, however.
"I know you don't like to fight, Sace," Doxson said, leaning down on the table with both hands. "But we need you."
"I think he is preparing for battle, Lord Doxson," Tyndall said, eyeing Sazed. "Those rings on his fingers give good indication of his intentions."
Sazed glanced across the table at her.
"And what is your place in this, Tyndall?"
"Lord Doxson came to me for advice," Tyndall said. "He has little experience with warfare himself, and wished to know the things I have studied about the generals of the past."
"Ah," Sazed said.
He turned to Doxson, frowning in thought. Eventually he nodded.
"Very well. I will take part in your project, but I must warn you against divisiveness. Please tell your men not to break the chain of command, unless they absolutely must."
Doxson nodded.
"Now, Lady Tyndall," Sazed said, "might we speak for a moment in private?"
She nodded, and they excused themselves, walking under the nearest overhanging gallery. In the shadows, behind one of the pillars, Sazed turned toward Tyndall. She looked so pristine, so poised, so calm, despite the dire situation. How did she do that?
"You're storing quite a large number of attributes, Sazed," Tyndall noted, glancing at his fingers again. "Surely you have other metal mines prepared from before?" "I used all of my wakefulness and speed, making my way to Luthadel," Sazed said. "And I have no health stored at all. I used up the last of it overcoming a sickness when I was teaching in the south. I always intended to fill another one, but we've been too busy. I do have some large amount of strength and weight stored, as well as a good selection of tin mines. Still, one can never be too well prepared, I think."
"Perhaps," Tyndall said. She glanced back at the group around the table.
"If it gives us something to do other than think about the inevitable, then preparation has not been wasted, I think."
Sazed felt a chill.
"Tyndall," he said quietly, "why did you stay? There is no place for you here."
"There is no place for you either," Sazed.
"These are my friends," he said. "I will not leave them."
"Then why did you convince their leaders to leave?"
"To flee and live," Sazed said.
"Survival is not a luxury often afforded to leaders," Tyndall said. "When they accept the devotion of others, they must accept the responsibility that comes with it. This people will die, but they need not die feeling betrayed."
"They were not. They expect to be saved, Sazed," Tyndall hissed quietly. "Even those men over there, even Doxson, the most practical one in this bunch, think that they'll survive. And do you know why? Because deep down they believe that something will save them."
something that saved them before. The only piece of the survivor they have left. She represents hope to them now. And you sent her away.
To live, Tyndall, Sazed repeated. It would have been a waste to lose Vin and Elland here.
Hope is never wasted, Tyndall said, eyes flashing. I thought you, of all people, would understand that. You think it was stubbornness that kept me alive all those years in the hands of the breeders?
And is it stubbornness or hope that kept you here in the city? He asked.
She looked up at him.
Neither.
Sazed looked at her for a long moment in the shadowed alcove. Planners talked in the ballroom, their voices echoing. Shards of light from the windows reflected off the marble floors, throwing slivers of illumination across the walls. Slowly, awkwardly, Sazed put his arms around Tyndall. She sighed, letting him hold her. He released his tin mines and let his senses return in a flood. Softness from her skin and warmth from her body washed across him as she moved farther into the embrace, resting her head against his chest. The scent of her hair, unperfumed but clean and crisp, filled his nose, the first thing he'd smelled in 3 days. With a clumsy hand, Sazed pulled free his spectacles so he could see her clearly. As sounds returned fully to his ears, he could hear Tyndall breathing beside him.
"Do you know why I love you, Sazed?" she asked quietly. "I cannot fathom," he answered honestly. "Because you never give in," she said. "Other men are strong like bricks, firm, unyielding. But if you pound on them long enough, they crack. You're strong like the wind. Always there, so willing to bend, but never apologetic for the times when you must be firm. I don't think any of your friends understand what a power they had in you." Had, he thought. She already thinks of all this in the past tense. And it feels right for her to do so. "I fear that whatever I have won't be enough to save them," Sazed whispered.
"It was enough to save 3 of them, though," Tyndall said. "You were wrong to send them away. But maybe you were right, too." Sazed just closed his eyes and held her, cursing her for staying, yet loving her for it all the same. At that moment, the walltop warning drums began to beat.
"And so, I have made one final gamble."
51. The misty red light of morning was a thing that should not have existed. Mist died before daylight. Heat made it evaporate. Even locking it inside of a closed room made it condense and disappear. It shouldn't have been able to withstand the light of the rising sun. Yet it did. The farther they'd gotten from Luthadel, the longer the mists lingered in the mornings. The change was slight. They were still only a few days' ride from Luthadel. But Vin knew. She saw the difference. This morning, the mists seemed even stronger than she'd anticipated. They didn't even weaken as the sun came up. They obscured its light. Mist, she thought. Deepness. She was increasingly sure that she was right about it, though she couldn't know for certain. Still, it felt right to her for some reason. The deepness hadn't been some monster or tyrant, but a force more natural, and therefore more frightening. A creature could be killed. The mists, they were far more daunting. The deepness wouldn't oppress with priests, but use the people's own superstitious terror. It wouldn't slaughter with armies, but with starvation. How did one fight something larger than a continent? A thing that couldn't feel anger, pain, hope, or mercy. Yet it was Vin's task to do just that. She sat quietly on a large boulder beside the night's fire pit, her legs up,
knees to her chest. Elland still slept. Spook was out scouting. She didn't question her place any longer. She was either mad or she was the hero of ages. It was her task to defeat the mists. Yet, she thought, frowning, shouldn't the thumpings be getting louder, not softer? The longer they traveled, the weaker the thumpings seemed. Was she too late? Was something happening at the well to dampen its power? Had someone else already taken it?
We have to keep moving.
Another person in her place might have asked why he had been chosen. Vin had known several men, both in Cayman's crew and in Ellen's government, who would complain every time they were given an assignment. Why me? They would ask. The insecure ones didn't think they were up to the task. The lazy ones wanted out of the work. Vin didn't consider herself to be either self-assured or self-motivated. Still, she saw no point in asking why. Life had taught her that sometimes things simply happened. Often there hadn't been any specific reason for Rhene to beat her, and reasons were weak comforts anyway. The reasons that Kelsier had needed to die were clear to her, but that didn't make her miss him any less. She had a job to do. The fact that she didn't understand it didn't stop her from acknowledging that she had to try to accomplish it. She simply hoped that she'd know what to do when the time came. Though the thumpings were weaker, they were still there. They drew her forward, to the Well of Ascension. Behind her, she could feel the lesser vibration of the mist spirit. It never disappeared until the mists themselves did. It had been there all morning, standing just behind her. "Do you know the secret to this all?" she asked quietly, turning toward the spirit in the reddish mists. "Do you have..." The allomantic pulse of the mist spirit was coming from directly inside the tent she shared with Elland. Vin jumped off the rock, landing on the frosted ground and scrambling to the tent. She threw open the flaps. Elland slept inside, head just barely visible as it poked out of the blankets. Mist filled the small tent, swirling, twisting. And that was odd enough. Mist didn't usually enter tents. And there in the middle of the mists was the spirit, standing directly above Elland. It wasn't even really there. It was just an outline in the mists, a repeating pattern caused by chaotic movements. And yet it was real. She could feel it, and she could see it. See it as it looked up, meeting her gaze with invisible eyes. Hateful eyes. It raised an insubstantial arm, and Vin saw something flash. She reacted immediately, whipping out a dagger, bursting into the tent and swinging. Her blow met something tangible in the mist spirit's hand. A metallic sound rang in the calm air, and Vin felt a powerful, numbing chill in her arm. The hairs across her entire body prickled. And then it disappeared, fading away, like the ringing of its somehow substantial blade. Vin blinked, then turned to look through the blowing tent flap. The mists outside were gone. Day had finally won. It didn't seem to have many victories remaining.
"Vin,"
Ellen said, yawning and stirring. Vin calmed her breathing. The spirit had gone. The daylight meant safety for now.
"Once it was the knights that I found safe," she thought. "Kelsier gave them to me."
"What's wrong?" Ellen asked. How could someone, even a nobleman, be so slow to rise, so unconcerned about the vulnerability he displayed while sleeping? She sheathed her dagger.
"What can I tell him? How can I protect him from something I can barely see?"
She needed to think.
"It was nothing," she said quietly. "Just me, being jumpy again."
Elland rolled over, sighing contentedly.
"Is Spook doing his morning scout?"
"Yes."
"Wake me when he gets back."
Vin nodded, but he probably couldn't see her. She knelt, looking at him as the sun rose behind her. She'd given herself to him, not just her body and not just her heart.
She'd abandoned her rationalizations, given away her reservations, all for him. She could no longer afford to think that she wasn't worthy of him, no longer give herself the false comfort of believing they couldn't ever be together. She'd never trusted anyone this much. Not Kelsier, not Sazed, not Rean. Elland had everything. That knowledge made her tremble inside. If she lost him, she would lose herself.
"I mustn't think about that," she told herself, rising.
She left the tent, quietly closing the flaps behind her. In the distance, shadows moved. Spook appeared a moment later.
"Someone's definitely back there," he said quietly. "Not spirits, Vin. 5 men with a camp."
Vin frowned.
"Following us?"
"They must be."
"Straff's scouts," she thought.
"We'll let Ellen decide what to do about them." Spook shrugged, walking over to sit on her rock.
"You going to wake him?"
Vin turned back.
"Let him sleep a little longer."
Spook shrugged again. He watched as she walked over to the fire pit and unwrapped the wood they'd covered the night before, then began to build a fire.
"You've changed, Vin," Spook said.
She continued to work.
"Everyone changes," she said. "I'm not a thief anymore, and I have friends to support me."
"I don't mean that," Spook said. "I mean recently. This last week. You're different than you were."
"Different how?"
"I don't know. You don't seem as frightened all the time."
Vin paused.
"I've made some decisions. About who I am and who I will be. About what I want."
She worked quietly for a moment and finally got a spark to catch.
"I'm tired of putting up with foolishness," she finally said. "Other people's foolishness and my own. I've decided to act, rather than second guess. Perhaps it's a more immature way of looking at things, but it feels right for now."
"It's not immature," Spook said.
Vin smiled, looking up at him. 16 and hardly grown into his body, he was the same age that she'd been when Kelsier had recruited her. He was squinting against the light, even though the sun was low.
"Lower your tin," Vin said. "No need to keep it on so strong."
Spook shrugged. She could see the uncertainty in him. He wanted so badly to be useful. She knew that feeling.
"What about you, Spook?" she said,
turning to gather the breakfast supplies. Broth and meal cakes again.
"How have you been lately?"
He shrugged yet again.
"I'd almost forgotten what it was like to try and have a conversation with a teenage boy," she thought, smiling.
"Spook," she said, just testing out the name.
"What do you think of that nickname, anyway? I remember when everyone called you by your real name."
"Lestibornis." Vin had tried to spell it once. She'd gotten about 5 letters in.
"Kelsier gave me my name," Spook said, as if that were reason enough to keep it.
And perhaps it was. Vin saw the look in Spook's eyes when he mentioned Kelsier. Clubs might be Spook's uncle, but Kelsier had been the one he looked up to. Of course, they all had looked up to Kelsier.
"I wish I were powerful, Vin,"
Spook said quietly, arms folded on his knees as he sat on the rock.
"Like you.
You have your own skills."
"Tin?" Spook asked. "Almost worthless. If I were Mistborn, I could do great things. Be someone important."
"Being important isn't all that wonderful, Spook," Vin said, listening to the thumpings in her head. "Most of the time it's just annoying."
Spook shook his head. "If I were Mistborn, I could save people, help people who need it. I could stop people from dying. But I'm just Spook. Weak. A coward."
Vin looked at him, frowning, but his head was bowed, and he wouldn't meet her eyes.
What was that about? She wondered.
Sazed used a bit of strength to help him take the steps three at a time. He burst out of the stairwell just behind Tyndall, the two of them joining the remaining members of the crew on the wall top. The drums still sounded. Each had a different rhythm as it sounded over the city. The mixing beats echoed chaotically from buildings and alleyways. The northern horizon seemed bare without Straff's army. If only that same emptiness had extended to the northeast, where the Kolos camp seemed in turmoil.
"Can anyone make out what's going on?" Breeze asked.
Ham shook his head.
"Too far. One of my scouts is a Tin-Eye," Club said, hobbling over. "He raised the alarm. Said the Kolos were fighting."
"My good man," Breeze said, "aren't the foul creatures always fighting?"
"More than usual," Club said. "Massive brawl."
Sazed felt a swift glimmer of hope.
"They're fighting," he said. "Perhaps they will kill each other."
Clubs eyed him with one of those looks.
"Read one of your books, Terraceman. What do they say about Kolos emotions?"
"They only have two," Sazed said. "Boredom and rage. But..." "This is how they always begin a battle," Tyndall said quietly. "They start to fight among themselves, enraging more and more of their members, and then..."
She trailed off, and Sazed saw it. The dark smudge to the east growing lighter, dispersing, resolving into individual members, charging the city.
"Bloody hell," Clubs swore,
then quickly began to hobble down the steps.
"Messengers away," he bellowed. "Archers to the wall. Secure the river gates. Battalions, form positions. Get ready to fight. Do you want those things breaking in here and getting at your children?"
Chaos followed. Men began to dash in all directions. Soldiers scrambled up the stairwells, clogging the way down, keeping the crew from moving.
"It's happening," Sazed thought numbly. "Once the stairwells are open," Doxson said quietly, "I want each of you to go to your battalion. Tyndall, you have Tingate, in the north by Keep Venture. I might need your advice, but for now stay with those boys. They'll listen to you. They respect Terracemen. Breeze, you have one of your soothers in each of the battalions 4 through 12?
Breeze nodded.
"They aren't much, though. Just have them keep those boys fighting," Doxson said. "Don't let our men break." 1,000 men are far too many for one soother to handle, my friend," Breeze said. "Have them do the best they can," Doxson said. "You and Ham take Pewtergate and Zinkgate. Looks like the Kolos are going to hit here first. Clubs should bring in reinforcements."
The two men nodded. Then Doxson looked at Sazed.
"You know where to go?"
"Yes. Yes, I think so," Sazed said, gripping the wall.
In the air, flakes of ash began to fall from the sky.
"Go then," Doxson said,
as one final squad of archers made its way out of the stairwell.
"My Lord Venture!"
Straff turned. With some stimulants, he was able to remain strong enough to stay atop his saddle, though he wouldn't have dared to fight. Of course, he wouldn't have fought anyway. That wasn't his way. One brought armies to do such things. He turned his animal as the messenger approached. The man puffed, putting hands on knees as he stopped beside Straff's mount, bits of ash swirling on the ground at his feet.
"My lord," the man said, "the Kolos army has attacked Luthadel."
"Just as you said, Zane," Straff thought in wonder.
"The Kolos attacking?"
Lord Janarl asked, moving his horse up beside Straff's. The handsome lord frowned, then eyed Straff.
"You expected this, my lord?"
"Of course,"
Straff said, smiling. Janarl looked impressed.
"Pass an order to the men, Janarl," Straff said. "I want this column turned back toward Luthadel."
"We can be there in an hour, my lord," Janarl said.
"No," Straff said. "Let's take our time. We wouldn't want to overwork our troops, would we?"
Janarl smiled.
"Of course not, my lord."
Arrows seemed to have little effect on the Koloss. Sazed stood, transfixed and appalled, atop his gate's watchtower. He wasn't officially in charge of the men, so he didn't have any orders to give. He simply stood with the scouts and messengers, waiting to see if he was needed or not. That left him plenty of time to watch the horror unfolding. The Koloss weren't charging his section of the wall yet, thankfully, and his men stood watching tensely as the creatures barreled toward Tin Gate and Pewter Gate in the distance. Even far away, the tower letting him see over a section of the city to where Tin Gate lay, Sazed could see the Koloss running straight through hailstorms of arrows. Some of the smaller ones appeared to fall dead or wounded, but most just continued to charge. Men murmured on the tower near him.
"We aren't ready for this," Sazed thought. "Even with months to plan and anticipate, we aren't ready. This is what we get, being ruled over by a god for 1,000 years. 1,000 years of peace. Tyrannical peace, but peace nonetheless. We don't have generals. We have men who know how to order a bath drawn. We don't have tacticians. We have bureaucrats. We don't have warriors. We have boys with sticks."
Even as he watched the oncoming doom, his scholar's mind was analytical. Tapping sight, he could see that many of the distant creatures, especially the larger ones, carried small uprooted trees. They were ready in their own way to break into the city. The trees wouldn't be as effective as real battering rams, but then the city gates weren't built to withstand real battering in the first place.
"Those Koloss are smarter than we give them credit for," he thought. "They can recognize the abstract value of coins, even if they don't have an economy. They can see that they'll need tools to break down our doors, even if they don't know how to make those tools."
The first Koloss wave reached the wall. Men began to toss down rocks and other items. Sazed's own section had similar piles, one just next to the gate arch, beside which he stood. But arrows had almost no effect. What good would a few rocks do? Koloss clumped around the base of the wall like the water of a dammed-up river. Distant thumps sounded as the creatures began to beat against the gates.
"Battalion 16!" a messenger called from below, riding up to Sazed's gate. "Lord Cooley!"
"Here!" a man called from the wall top beside Sazed's tower.
"Pewter Gate needs reinforcements immediately. Lord Penrod commands you to bring 6 companies and follow me."
Lord Cooley began to give the orders.
6 companies, Sazed thought. 600 of our 1,000.
Club's words from earlier returned to him. 20,000 men might seem like a lot, until one saw how thinly they had to be stretched. The 6 companies marched away, leaving the courtyard before Sazed's gate disturbingly empty. The 400 remaining men, 300 in the courtyard, 100 on the wall, shuffled quietly. Sazed closed his eyes and tapped his hearing tin mind. He could hear wood beating on wood. Screams. Human screams. He released the tin mind quickly, then tapped eyesight again, leaning out and looking toward the section of the wall where the battle was being fought. The Koloss were throwing back the fallen rocks, and they were far more accurate than the defenders. Sazed jumped as he saw a young soldier's face crushed, his body thrown back off the wall top by the rock's force. Sazed released his tin mind, breathing quickly.
"Be firm, men," called one of the soldiers on the wall.
He was barely a youth, a nobleman, but he couldn't be more than 16. Of course, a lot of the men in the army were that age.
"Stand firm," the young commander repeated.
His voice sounded uncertain, and it trailed off as he noticed something in the distance. Sazed turned, following the man's gaze. The Koloss had gotten tired of standing around, piling up at a single gate. They were moving to surround the city, large groups of them breaking up, fording the river Chanaril toward other gates. Gates like Sazed's. Vin landed directly in the middle of the camp. She tossed a handful of pewter dust into the fire pit, then pushed, blowing coals, soot, and smoke across a pair of surprised guards who had been fixing breakfast. She reached out and pulled out the stakes of the 3 small tents. All 3 collapsed.
One was unoccupied, but cries came from the other two. The canvas outlined struggling, confused figures, one inside the larger tent, two inside the smaller one. The guards scrambled back, raising their arms to protect their eyes from the sudden sparks, their hands reaching for swords. Vin raised a fist toward them, and, as they blinked their eyes clear, she let a single coin drop to the ground. The guards froze, then took their hands off their swords. Vin eyed the tents. The person in charge would be inside the larger one, and he was the man she would need to deal with. Probably one of Straff's captains, though the guards didn't wear venture heraldry. Perhaps... Jasties Lical poked his head out of his tent, cursing as he extricated himself from the canvas. He'd changed much in the 2 years since Vin had last seen him. However, there had been hints of what the man would become. His thin figure had become spindly. His balding head had fulfilled its promise. Yet how had his face come to look so haggard, so old? He was Elland's age.
"Jasties," Elland said, stepping out of his hiding place in the forest.
He walked into the clearing, Spook at his side.
"Why are you here?"
Jasties managed to stand as his two other soldiers cut their way out of their tent. He waved them down.
"El," he said, "I didn't know where else to go. My scouts said that you were fleeing, and it seemed like a good idea. Wherever you're going, I want to go with you. We can hide there, maybe. We can—"
"Jasties," Ellen snapped, striding forward to stand beside Vin.
"Where are your Kolos? Did you send them away?"
"I tried," Jasties said, looking down.
"They wouldn't go. Not once they'd seen Luthadel. And then—"
"What?" Ellen demanded.
"A fire," Jasties said. "In our supply carts."
Vin frowned.
"Your supply carts," Ellen said. "The carts where you carried your wooden coins?"
"Yes."
"Lord Ruler Man," Ellen said, stepping forward. "And you just left them there? Without leadership? Outside our home?"
"They would have killed me, El," Jasties said. "They were beginning to fight so much, to demand more coins, to demand we attack the city. If I'd stayed, they'd have slaughtered me. They're beasts, beasts that only barely have the shape of man."
"And you left," Ellen said. "You abandoned Luthadel to them."
"You abandoned it too," Jasties said.
He walked forward, hands pleading as he approached Ellen.
"Look, El, I know I was wrong. I thought I could control them. I didn't mean for this to happen."
Ellen fell silent, and Vin could see a hardness growing in his eyes. Not a dangerous hardness like Kelsier, more of a regal bearing. The sense that he was more than he wanted to be. He stood straight, looking down at the man pleading before him.
"You raised an army of violent monsters, and led them in a tyrannical assault, Jasties," Ellen said. "You caused the slaughter of innocent villages. Then you abandoned that army without leadership or control, outside the most populated city in the whole of the Final Empire."
"Forgive me," Jasties said.
Ellen looked the man in the eyes.
"I forgive you," he said quietly. Then in one fluid stroke he drew his sword and sheared Jasties' head from his shoulders. "But my kingdom cannot."
Vin stared dumbfounded as the corpse fell to the ground. Jasties' soldiers cried out, drawing their weapons. Ellen turned, his face solemn, and raised the point of his bloodied sword toward them.
"You think this execution was performed in error?"
The guards paused.
"No, my lord,"
one of them finally said, looking down. Ellen knelt and cleaned his sword on Jasties' cloak.
"Considering what he did, this was a better death than he deserved."
Ellen snapped his sword back into its sheath.
"But he was my friend. Bury him. Once you are through, you are welcome to travel with me to Terrace. Or you may go back to your homes. Choose as you wish."
With that, he walked back into the woods. Vin paused, watching the guards. Solemnly, they moved forward to collect the body. She nodded to Spook, then dashed out into the forest after Elland. She didn't have to go far. She found him sitting on a rock a short distance away, staring at the ground. An ash fall had begun, but most of the flakes got caught in the trees, coating their leaves like black moss.
"Elland?"
she asked. He looked out, staring into the forest. "I'm not sure why I did it, Vin," he said quietly. "Why should I be the one to bring justice? I'm not even king. And yet it had to be done. I felt it. I feel it still." She laid a hand on his shoulder. "He's the first man I've ever killed," Elland said. "He and I had such dreams once. We'd ally two of the most powerful imperial houses uniting Luthadel as never before. Ours wasn't to have been a treaty of greed, but a true political alliance, intended to help make the city a better place." He looked up at her. "I think I understand now, Vin, what it is like for you. In a way, we're both knives, both tools. Not for each other, but for this kingdom, this people." She wrapped her arms around him, holding him, pulling his head to her chest.
"I'm sorry," she whispered.
"It had to be done," he said. "The saddest part is he's right. I abandoned them too. I should take my own life with this sword."
"You left for a good reason, Elland," Vin said. "You left to protect Luthadel, to make it so Straff wouldn't attack."
"And if the Koloss attack before Straff can?"
"Maybe they won't," Vin said. "They don't have a leader. Maybe they'll attack Straff's army instead."
"No," Spook's voice said. Vin turned, seeing him approach through the forest, eyes squinting against the light.
"That boy burns way too much tin," she thought.
"What do you mean?" Elland asked, turning. Spook looked down. "They won't attack Straff's army, El. It won't be there anymore."
"What?" Vin asked.
Spook looked away, shame showing in his face.
"I'm a coward." His words from earlier returned to her.
"You knew," Vin said. "You knew the Koloss were going to attack."
"That's ridiculous," Elland said. "You couldn't have known the Jastis would follow us."
"I didn't," Spook said, a lump of ash falling from a tree behind him, bursting before the wind and fluttering in 100 different flakes to the ground.
"But my uncle figured that Straff would withdraw his army and let the Koloss attack the city. That's why Sazed decided to send us away."
Vin felt a sudden chill. "I found the location of the Well of Ascension," Sazed had said. "To the north, in the Terrace Mountains."
"Clubs told you this?" Elland was saying. Spook nodded. "And you didn't tell me?" Elland demanded, standing.
"Oh, no."
Spook paused, then shook his head. "You would have wanted to go back. I didn't want to die, El. I'm sorry. I'm a coward." He cringed, glancing at Elland's sword, shying away. Elland paused, as if realizing he'd been stepping toward the boy. "I'm not going to hurt you, Spook," he said. "I'm just ashamed of you." Spook lowered his eyes, then sank down to the ground, sitting with his back to an aspen.
"The thumping's getting softer." "Elland?" Vin whispered. He turned. "Sazed lied. The well isn't to the north."
"What?"
"It's at Luthadel."
"Vin, that's ridiculous. We'd have found it."
"We didn't," she said firmly, standing looking south. Focusing, she could feel the thumpings washing across her, pulling her south.
The well can't be to the south, Ellen said. The legends all place it north, in the Terrace Mountains.
Vin shook her head, confused.
It's there, she said. I know it is. I don't know how, but it is there.
Ellen looked at her, then nodded, trusting her instincts.
Oh, Sazed, she thought. You probably had good intentions, but you may have doomed us all.
If the city fell to the Kolos.
How fast can we get back? Ellen asked. That depends, she said. Go back? Spook asked, looking up. El, they're all dead. They told me to tell you the truth once you got to Tathingdwen, so you wouldn't kill yourselves climbing the mountains in the winter for nothing. But when Clubs talked to me, it was also to say goodbye. I could see it in his eyes. He knew he'd never see me again.
Ellen paused, and Vin could see a moment of uncertainty in his eyes. A flash of pain, of terror. She knew those emotions because they hit her at the same time.
Sazed, Breeze, Ham.
Ellen grabbed her arm.
You have to go, Vin, he said. There might be survivors, refugees. They'll need your help.
She nodded, the firmness of his grip, the determination in his voice giving her strength.
Spook and I will follow, he said. It should only take us a couple of days' hard riding, but an Allomancer with pewter can go faster than any horse over long distances. I don't want to leave you, she whispered.
I know. It was still hard. How could she run off and leave him when she'd only just rediscovered him? Yet she could feel the Well of Ascension even more urgently now that she was sure of its location. And if some of her friends did survive the attack... Vin gritted her teeth, then opened up her pouch and pulled out the last of her pewter dust. She drank it down with a mouthful of water from her flask. It scratched her throat going down.
It's not much, she thought. It won't let me pewter drag for long. They're all dead,
Spook mumbled again. Vin turned. The pulses thumped demandingly. From the south.
I'm coming. Ellen, she said. Please do something for me. Don't sleep during the night when the mists are out. Travel during the night if you can, and keep your wits about you. Watch for the mist spirit. I think it may mean you harm.
He frowned, but nodded. Vin flared pewter, then took off at a run toward the highway.
My pleas, my teachings, my objections, and even my treasons were all ineffectual. Alendi has other counselors now, ones who tell him what he wants to hear.
52. Breeze did his best to pretend he was not in the middle of a war. It didn't work very well. He sat on his horse at the edge of Zinkgate's courtyard. Soldiers shuffled and clanked, standing in ranks before the gates, waiting and watching their companions atop the wall. The gates thumped. Breeze cringed, but continued his soothing.
Be strong, he whispered. Fear, uncertainty. I take these away. Death may come through those doors, but you can fight it. You can win. Be strong.
Brass flared like a bonfire within his stomach. He had long since used up his vials, and had taken to choking down handfuls of brass dust and mouthfuls of water, which he had in a steady supply thanks to Doxson's mounted messengers.
How long can this possibly last? He thought, wiping his brow, continuing to soothe.
Allomancy was, fortunately, very easy on the body. Allomantic power came from within the metals themselves, not from the one who burned them. Yet soothing was much more complex than other allomantic skills, and it demanded constant attention.
Fear, terror, anxiety, he whispered. The desire to run or give up. I take these from you.
The speaking wasn't necessary, of course, but it had always been his way. It helped keep him focused. After a few more minutes of soothing, he checked his pocket watch, then turned his horse and trotted over to the other side of the courtyard.
The gates continued to boom, and Breeze wiped his brow again. He noted with dissatisfaction that his handkerchief was nearly too damp to do him any good. It was also beginning to snow. The wetness would make the ash stick to his clothing, and his suit would be absolutely ruined.
"The suit will be ruined by your blood, Breeze," he told himself. "The time for silliness is over. This is serious. Far too serious. How did you even end up here?"
He redoubled his efforts, soothing a new group of soldiers. He was one of the most powerful allomancers in the Final Empire, especially when it came to emotional allomancy. He could soothe hundreds of men at once, assuming they were packed close enough together, and assuming that he was focusing on simple emotions. Even Kelsier hadn't been able to manage those numbers. Yet the entire crowd of soldiers was beyond even his ability, and he had to do them in sections. As he began work on the new group, he saw the ones he had left begin to wilt, their anxiety taking over.
"When those doors burst, these men are going to scatter."
The gates boomed. Men clustered on the walls, throwing down rocks, shooting arrows, fighting with a frantic lack of discipline. Occasionally an officer would push his way past them, yelling orders, trying to coordinate their efforts. But Breeze was too far away to tell what they were saying. He could just see the chaos of men moving, screaming, and shooting. And of course, he could see the return fire. Rocks zipped into the air from below, some cracking against the ramparts. Breeze tried not to think about what was on the other side of the wall, the thousands of enraged Koloss beasts. Occasionally, a soldier would drop. Blood dripped down into the courtyard from several sections of the ramparts.
"Fear, anxiety, terror," Breeze whispered.
Orianne had escaped. Vin, Elland, and Spook were safe. He had to keep focusing on those successes.
"Thank you, Sazed, for making us send them away," he thought.
Hoofbeats clopped behind him. Breeze continued his soothing, but turned to see Clubs riding up. The general rode his horse with a hunched-over slouch, eyeing the soldiers with one eye open, the other perpetually squeezed closed in a squint.
"They're doing well," he said.
"My dear man," Breeze said, "they're terrified. Even the ones beneath my soothing watched those gates like they were some terrible void waiting to suck them in."
Clubs eyed Breeze.
"Feeling poetic today, are we?"
"Impending doom has that effect on me," Breeze said as the gates shook. "Either way, I doubt the men are doing well."
Clubs grunted.
"Men are always nervous before a fight. But these are good lads. They'll hold."
The gates shook and quivered, splinters appearing at the edges.
"Those hinges are straining," Breeze thought.
"Don't suppose you can soothe those Koloss?" Clubs asked. "Make them less ferocious?"
Breeze shook his head.
"Soothing those beasts has no effect. I've tried it."
They fell silent again, listening to the booming gates. Eventually, Breeze glanced over at Clubs, who sat unperturbed on his horse.
"You've been in combat before," Breeze said. "How often?"
"Off and on for the better part of 20 years, when I was younger," Clubs said. "Fighting rebellions in the distant dominances, warring against the nomads out in the barrens. The Lord Ruler was pretty good about keeping those conflicts quiet."
"And how did you do?" Breeze asked. "Were you often victorious?"
"Always," Clubs said.
Breeze smiled slightly.
"Of course," Clubs said, glancing at Breeze. "We were the ones with Koloss on our side. Damn hard to kill, those beasts."
"Great," Breeze thought.
Vin ran. She'd only been on one pewter drag before, with Kelsier 2 years ago. While burning pewter at a steady flare, one could run with incredible speed, like a sprinter in their quickest dash, without ever growing tired. Yet the process did something to a body. Pewter kept her moving, but it also bottled up her natural fatigue.
The juxtaposition made her mind fuzz, bringing on a trance-like state of exhausted energy. Her soul wanted so badly to rest, yet her body just kept running and running and running, following the canal towpath toward the south, toward Luthadel. Vin was prepared for the effects of pewter dragging this time, and so she handled them far better. She fought off the trance, keeping her mind focused on her goal, not the repetitive motions of her body. However, that focus led her to discomforting thoughts.
"Why am I doing this?" she wondered. "Why push myself so hard?"
Spook said it. Luthadel has to have already fallen. There is no need for urgency. And yet she ran. She saw images of death in her mind. Ham, Breeze, Dachshund, Clubs, and dear, dear Sazed. The first real friends she had ever known. She loved Elend, and part of her blessed the others for sending him away from danger. However, the other piece of her was furious at them for sending her away. That fury guided her.
"They let me abandon them. They forced me to abandon them."
Kelsier had spent months teaching her how to trust. His last words to her in life had been ones of accusation, and they were words she had never been able to escape. "You still have a lot to learn about friendship, Vin." He had gone on to risk his life to get Spook and Orsure out of danger, fighting off and eventually killing a Steel Inquisitor. He had done this despite Vin's protests that the risk was pointless. She had been wrong.
"How dare they?"
she thought, feeling the tears on her cheeks as she dashed down the canal's highway-like towpath. Pewter gave her inhuman balance, and the speed, which would have been perilous for anyone else, felt natural to her. She didn't trip, she didn't stumble, but an outside observer would think her pace reckless. Trees whipped by. She left washouts and dips in the land. She ran as she had done only once before, and she pushed herself even harder than she had on that day. Before, she had been running simply to keep up with Kelsier. Now she ran for those she loved.
"How dare they?" she thought again. "How dare they not give me the same chance that Kelsier had? How dare they refuse my protection, refuse to let me help them? How dare they die?"
Her pewter was running low, and she was only a few hours into her run. True, she had probably covered an entire day's worth of walking in those few hours. Yet somehow she knew it wouldn't be enough. They were already dead. She was going to be too late, just as when she'd run years before. Too late to save their army. Too late to save her friends. Vin continued to run, and she continued to cry.
"How did we get here, Clubs?" Breeze asked quietly, still on the floor of the courtyard, before the booming gate.
He sat on his horse amid a muddy mixture of falling snow and ash. The simple, quiet flutterings of white and black seemed to belie the screaming men, the breaking gate, and the falling rocks. Clubs looked over at him, frowning. Breeze continued to stare up at the ash and snow. Black and white. Lazy.
"We aren't men of principle," Breeze said quietly. "We're thieves. Cynics. You, a man tired of doing the Lord Ruler's bidding, a man determined to see himself get ahead for once. Me, a man of wavering morals who loves to toy with others, to make their emotions my game. How did we end up here, standing at the head of an army, fighting an idealist's cause? Men like us shouldn't be leaders."
Clubs watched the men in the courtyard.
"Guess we're just idiots," he finally said.
Breeze paused, then noticed that glimmer in Club's eyes, that spark of humor, the spark that was hard to recognize unless one knew Club's very well. It was that spark that told the truth, that showed Club's to be a man of rare understanding. Breeze smiled.
"I guess we are. Like we said before, it's Kelsier's fault. He turned us into idiots who would stand at the front of a doomed army.
That bastard, Club said.
Indeed, Breeze said.
Ash and snow continued to fall. Men yelled in alarm. And the gates burst open.
The eastern gate has been breached, Master Terraceman, Doxson's messenger said, puffing slightly as he crouched beside Sazed.
They both sat beneath the wall-top battlements, listening to the Koloss pound on their own gate. The one that had fallen would be Zinc Gate, the one on the easternmost side of Luthadel.
Zinc Gate is the most well-defended, Sazed said quietly. They will be able to hold it, I think.
The messenger nodded. Ash blew along the wall-top, piling in the cracks and alcoves in the stone, the black flakes adulterated by the occasional bit of bone-white snow.
"Is there anything you wish me to report to Lord Doxson?" the messenger asked.
Sazed paused, glancing along his wall's defenses. He'd climbed down from the watchtower, joining the regular ranks of men. The soldiers had run out of stones, though the archers were still working. He peeked over the side of the wall and saw the Koloss corpses piling up. However, he also saw the splintered front of the gate.
"It's amazing they can maintain such rage for so long," he thought, ducking back.
The creatures continued to howl and scream like feral dogs. He sat back against the wet stone, shivering in the chill wind, his toes growing numb. He tapped his brass mind, drawing out the heat he'd stored therein, and his body suddenly flooded with a pleasant sensation of warmth.
"Tell Lord Doxson that I fear for this gate's defenses," Sazed said quietly. "The best men were stolen away to help with the eastern gates, and I have little confidence in our leader. If Lord Doxson could send someone else to be in charge, that would be for the best, I think."
The messenger paused.
"What?" Sazed asked.